Good afternoon. It's 12:06 and time for Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOY. We hope that you joined today's conversation, so get ready to give us a call at 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Julia Meek.
Thank you, Sarah. And in case you haven't noticed, it's the first Friday in September, and that means we're wearing our Penn Hollow Fan Club buttons and ready for our first Friday romp through local art centricity.
Don't forget the fezzes.
No, Sarah was in charge of the fezzes, but sorry. We have the Journal Gazette's ever inquisitive Steve Penn Hollow inquiring most recently into our fezzes, our fez supply. He's planning a most mellifluous route today with Heartland's director Bob Nance and Karen Gibbons Brown, the executive director of the Fort Wayne Ballet. They're discussing their upcoming collaborative production of Carmina Burana in this first segment. And then J.L. Nave from the Fort Wayne Philharmonic slides into the studio for a preview of this fall's concert fair. But first, as we love to do, Sarah and I each have a quick pick art tip for you, a sparkling gem among the treasure trove of this weekend's absolutely phenomenal art-centric happenings you should know about. What's your pick, Sarah?
My pick is an event that's going on this Sunday, the 9th. It's the Allen County SPCA's Catwalk in the Wild event. That's going to be at the Grand Wayne Convention Center in downtown Fort Wayne. Again, that's Sunday. It's from, I believe it starts at 5:30 and runs through the night till 7, 8-ish. And there's going to be, I've been looking at the website, there's going to be lots of makeup and hair artists and all sorts of fun things that are going to be going on in a competition. And there's still tickets available if you'd like to go. You can go to the Allen County SPCA catwalk.org website and find out more there. And again, that's Sunday. And it's a fundraiser for the SPCA in town. And I love cats, so I hope that they raise lots of money.
That does sound like a wild and very worthy cause, Sarah.
Yes.
Indeed. Are you going to paint your face?
No. Okay. I don't think so, but maybe I'll bring my cat and let him get his cat.
Well, tonight I am suggesting what you have Sunday outlined nicely, but tonight's first Friday reading at the Three Rivers Food Co-op's little homey One World Cafe is a great monthly presentation of homegrown poetry and spoken word, and they're just issuing with their fall after being off for the summer. It's coordinated by IPFW's George Calamaris, and this month's featured authors are Craig Nix and Mary Arnold Schwartz. And the readings begin at 7:30, end at 8:30. That's tonight. The admission's free. The co-op's located at Spring and Sherman Streets, and on the right side of the co-op is their lovely One World Cafe. Great first Friday readings.
Cool.
In the meantime, yes, something for a Friday and Sunday then.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have our walking shoes on and are ready for a musical meander through some pretty exciting territory with the Journal Gazette Steve Penn Hollow blazing the trail. Hi, Steve. How is September treating you?
It's treating me fine. And you?
Time flies.
Time does fly.
And
time
we are having
fly. It'll
fun.
Be the end of September before we know it.
Mm-hmm. That's right, and that'll be fall.
Well, we've got many local artistic organizations are having their seasons start around this time and in the next few weeks. We have Karen Gibbons Brown, executive director of the Fort Wayne Ballet, and Bob Nance, president and artistic director of the Heartland Chamber Chorale, to discuss the opening of both their seasons simultaneously with Carmina Burana. This is a first in the sense that, I mean, have we had two artistic organizations like this open their seasons with the same event?
I can speak from experience, having spent the bulk of my career here in Fort Wayne, that a lot of organizations do collaborations, and I do not think it's a first to have two groups collaborate. Heartland has collaborated with the Fort Wayne Philharmonic, with the Museum of Art. I mean, we reach out with the Children's Choir and others to do different things. We all do it. I think what's unique about this one is that there are actually three organizations, even though the new artistic director of the Fort Wayne Children's Choir is not here, John Bissaro. These three organizations are needed in order to really bring the full scope of the Songs of Bremen. Or Buren, the Carmina Burana, to life. And so I think it's the first time that three major openings have happened at the same time. You know, three large arts groups in Fort Wayne, all under the aegis of Arch United, is actually coming together to open their season. So it's newsworthy from there. And then, of course, the real news is we're actually staging Carmina Burana.
In full.
In full.
That's the exciting part, I think,
yeah.
for us.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting for Fort Wayne.
We had talked before we started here about the possibility that this had been done before, but there's no, I mean, this, it's been a long time. If it did happen, it happened a long time ago.
Over 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. So what are the challenges of doing this? Well, why don't we talk a little bit about what this is? What is the Carmina Burana?
Well, Carmina, translated, means song okay. or hymn. And the Burana, it comes from a little Benedictine monastery where they discovered these parchments, about 119, 120 parchments that were extant from this collection of itinerant monks who really had sort of given up their vows and decided to take part in everything that we know that's life, from sex, drugs, and rock and roll to just making light and making love during the season of spring. It's life in its most real form. And these educated monks who were just going to be in the world decided to write about it. And these were discovered in the early 1800s. They were codified, and a colleague of Karl Orff's brought them to his attention, and he extracted 24 of them. There are actually 25. The first one, O Fortuna, is repeated in the end. And he put together a real composite of what it is to live. And it's fresh today because everything that's in Carmina is happening today. The good, the bad, and the ugly. It's all there. And so this is a scenic cantata, and it's very profane in the fact that it has everything from pagan rites to high church prayer. And so you put it in the composite, and you normally, we've done it several times, Philharmonic's done it, Heartland's done it, and we do it in concert performance, and you can read the text and that's great, but it isn't really a scenic cantata until you have the staging of it. So we put the ballet in front of you, and you get the visual interpretation of what that text is. And it's pretty powerful.
Hmm. Has dance always been a part of this thing? When did dance come into it?
Well,
the first time it was choreographed was 1959
okay.
by John Butler, considered very avant-garde, a bit risque, very much compared to the premiere of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, Sacre du Printemps. It was a little bit... not accepted, I guess.
It was edgy.
Publicly.
The audience, as they did for the Rite of Spring, they virtually
out.
Rioted or walked yes. out or just said that this is horrendous.
Right.
It just so excited the sensibilities, and really it just shed light on what reality is.
Right.
You know? And I think that today, with information flowing, we see a lot more reality, and we kind of think, oh, our world is so awful, right? I mean, think about it. The internet has given you entree to so much of the truth that's around us and people's variations of the truth. Mm-hmm. The thing is that this has been going on time immemorial. So these monks in Middle Europe were codifying what was going on 500 years ago, and today it's exactly the same. Who doesn't get frisky in springtime? Right? It's right there in Carmina Burana, and you're going to see it on the stage. Who doesn't face death? Hello? So that's also in there. And who hasn't spent time at Henry's? All you people go to Henry's. We actually are going to stage Henry's on the stage at the Archinitis.
Yep, pretty
Center.
Much.
There's a tavern scene. It's great fun. And the thing is, the music is quite simple. Karl Orff was an educator. He wrote music that was intended to teach young people the basics and the fundamentals of music, and it's all there. And it's very singable. Karen and I were just walking, and we started talking about some choreography because we grab every minute we can, right? And then it was like, oh, I'm not going to get that song out of my head.
All day long.
All
it's
day
very
long.
Hummable. I think people are surprised at how well-known these pieces are. They may not realize you're from the work Carmina Burana, but you hum them all the time. You see them all the time in movies and commercials. And so it's really fun to, it's great to work with you too, I have to say. It's wonderful. There's nothing like the live music. And then it's like being in surround sound with the voices behind you. You can actually feel it in your body as a dancer. So to have the movement, the visualization of what you all are doing actually in front of the voices with the orchestra in front or the musicians in front.
And you're bringing up something that's really important for audiences to understand. Karen and the ballet could have chosen to do this with a recording. It's very predictable. They can, the dancers can time it up, and then they get used to hearing the music and they do it. But there's no flexibility. You have no interaction between the conductor and the players in the pit and the singers behind them. There's all of that reality comes to bear in the course of a live performance. So sometimes for practical reasons, you do have to do it with recordings. But when you can see it live and you can actually amass the forces to bring that to bear, that's something special. That's very special. So we are fortunate that we were able to pull the forces together to make that happen. So don't miss it. And just in case we run out of time, let's put the...
Don't
when
miss
is it?
That.
It's the 21st of September. That's a Friday night. Mm-hmm. And then on Sunday afternoon, the 23rd at 2:30. So 8 o'clock on Friday, 2:30. The program is very doable. Karen and I are going to tell you a little bit about it at the beginning of the program, and then the program shoots off. Takes about an hour. And so that's, it's a doable program. It's not a very long night for you. And you're going to love it. It's rated PG. We should say that, because I was going to say an hour is a good program for young people to attend. But you need to know that we're dealing with life at its best and its worst, and you're going to see some pretty dramatic things on stage.
Well, define PG as it translates to this.
Well, okay, you're a parent.
Yes.
So you wouldn't want to take your kids to an R-rated movie unless you'd previewed it and you understood what the language and the content of is. PG is a little bit less than R, but parental guidance means the parents should read some of the material, and we can provide that to you, and understand what they're about to see in terms of text and material, and then interpret it to their children.
And there's nothing inappropriate in the movement. It was edgy in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s. We wouldn't consider it edgy by today's standards. Mm-hmm. There is not a tutu in sight.
Right.
There's a lot of flesh-colored costuming
that
has color across your body. But we just felt like people needed to know it wasn't the Pretty Pretty Princess dance program. And while those are wonderful and great, there isn't anything inappropriate in this. Just come prepared. The words aren't in English. You won't understand the words, but again, we're visualizing the words.
Well, and then the text is in the program. You can actually read about that, so it's not so bad from that standpoint. But we do talk about life, death, and the rites of spring, which have everything to do with blooming in many forms.
With young people,
with young
yes.
people, yeah. And so I'm thinking that young people, if they haven't had that conversation with their parents, probably now's a good time.
Right.
And what a wonderful setting. And I'd like to remind all of our listeners that this is Midday Matters, a very Friday Art-centric edition, and it's also Penhallow Day, and Steve Penhallow.
Every day is Penhallow Day.
I know. But studio savvy is what we are. And we're really happy to have Bob Nance and Karen Gibbons-Brown, the brains and whole think tank, I think,
brawn.
Behind this.
Put well, brawn in
brawn.
There.
Okay,
there's
certainly.
Some brawn involved.
Thank you. And a lot of imagination.
I just do what I'm told.
We're starting the season with Carmina Burana. How absolutely wonderful is that?
It's fantastic. And what? Now tell me a little bit about, I mean, this seems like such an unusual, how this all started and how it turned into this work, this great work. I mean, how do you explain how this has lasted as long as it has?
I think it is the simplicity of the music and the fact that there's just a solid rhythmic beat to it.
Yeah.
We all know that that great, when Tipper Gore was on her edge 20 years ago, 25 years ago, about the power of music, and that she was on her tirade about actually censoring music because of its ability to drive young people before they actually knew what the content was. And, you know, this has been well known for centuries, and especially in the 1930s Germany. They knew that they could drive people through good music, good propaganda, and things like that. Well, this was part of the philosophic era of writing music that Karl Orff was in, and he took his training to that nth degree. So that driving rhythm, that paganistic pulse of the same thing over and over, that mantra style music really drives it, and it sticks with you. I think that's why the first movement, O Fortuna, is the one that's most often quoted in movies and you know, just everywhere, commercials. You hear it, you will know this music instantly. And then I thought you were actually going to ask you know, how did we decide to do this together?
Oh, yeah, that
so
too.
That's definitely. Too. I mean, there's a reason that Karl Orff, you know, he said this is, when he wrote that work and it had the appeal, he said, this is the, that's it. Everything I've written up to this point is worthless. This is what it's all about. And so he, that inspired, spurred him on to write two more sets of Carminas that are even more racy, but those are rarely done. I think just the first one just kind of took hold. Well, so flashback 15 years or so ago, and
not that long.
Well, that's been the start of Heartland. It was already on my bucket list to do Carmina, and we ended up doing it with a fellow group, the South Bend Chamber Singers up in South Bend. And at that moment, when we put it on our schedule, I called Karen and I said, wouldn't you like to do this with the ballet? And she said, I'd love to do it. I've been wanting to do that for a long time. But it takes so much, you know, the aligning of the stars and the financing and the location and the date and all these things to make that happen. So when it wasn't going to happen then, we just kept talking about it. And that was about 10 years ago. And then before we knew it, we were reprogramming it again because it was going to work on the ballet schedule. And we could make it happen. So we've been talking about it for a long time. So this is a real thrill for us because we just want to do it. And then the other connection, which I discovered this past weekend, was that my teacher at Carnegie Mellon, Dr. Robert Page, did this work first as a ballet and knows all the people that Karen was trained by. So he comes from that generation that trained all trained the folks to do it as a ballet. And he, in fact, did 35 performances of it as a ballet. So I went to study just to make sure I was clear on what I would need to do as a conductor of the performance. And then we got on the phone together, and we just had a real moment of synergy about how this is going to come together. So I feel really good about what Fort Wayne's going to see, just not because I'm super confident in ballet's ability to pull this together and that they're just so good, but that that I'm now resourced with enough information to do a good job by Karen. So I'm really excited about it.
And I've heard the rehearsal, or it's a performance disc that you have given us for rehearsal, and the chorale sounds great. They're just wonderful. So it's going to be quite exciting. Yeah. And I think, too, as you said, the stars aligned, but I don't want people to miss the fact that some of the challenge has been logistic, in that you have over 100 voices on the stage, you have about 30 dancers on and off the stage, and then you have the musicians as well. So it's a magnitude of effort to put that many bodies and artists in the same place. So it should be exciting.
We're going
to
make it very modern in that we have to use amplification in the space. And so we're going with digital instruments. And so that makes it very 21st century, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, digital instruments are getting in their own right pretty good. And so you have to, I found myself in my later career being very discerning about different keyboards and their ability to actually have an aesthetically pleasing sound.
Sure.
And to work well with all the literature, because not all keyboards can do that. But that's a practical consideration. It was practical because of the cost of moving and having grand pianos and then having to amplify anyway, because the chorus is at the back of the stage and the instruments and the pianos are in the pit. So that's just too much of a divide to carry the sound. So we're just making the best of the technology.
With all those feet in the middle.
That's right, exactly. Oh my gosh, it's going to be fantastic. So
what is it? What does the children's choir add to the mix? I mean, in terms of tonal quality. I mean, I'm getting into an area I probably shouldn't talk about in terms of the
you're
the
exactly
right.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, what is it? What, you know, from your standpoint, what does that add to the overall?
The scenes that they sing have to do with innocence, and it's the vocal quality, because you literally can, and there have been performances where you don't use children, and you just use a smaller core and have lighter voices. But they really, first of all, they need to experience this music too, and it does add a specific quality to that scene in early spring of innocent and childhood innocence. So they only sing in two numbers, I think.
I so look forward to it. Also, I've got to say, really, bravo and brava just for bringing Carmina Burana here. Karl Orff really is one of my heroes, and his whole street songs are fantastic.
Yeah.
And this is like the video version of it. and can't wait. We just have a few minutes left, so let's recap this wonderful story and the presentation. Give yourselves not only your own plugs, but tell people exactly when and where they're going to be able to see this.
OK. Okay. Well, why don't you tell, why don't you frame it? Because we do this in three scenes.
We do this in three scenes. As Bob mentioned, it's about an hour long, but the first scene is Spring Love. The second scene, depending on which version you read, it's the tavern or profane love, tainted love, and that's exactly what it is. And the third scene is courtly or the pure love, as you mentioned, the high church. And it's going to be really quite an exciting event.
Right. We have some great soloists. We have people will recognize Denise Bernardini and Ryan DeReich, who have done Messiah with me with Heartland and also the Fort Wayne Philharmonic. Ryan is a fantastic baritone, lives half his life in Luxembourg and the other half in the United States. And so he's going to be the baritone, and you have to act that. He is the most profane monk out there. And then you have Denise Ritter, fine operatic soprano, is going to be our woman who gives herself in the end to her love in the courtly scene and sings the highest note of the whole oratorio, high D, very high, obviously he's excited. She's going to sing that high. And then we also have Fernando Tarango, the local artist, tenor in the chorale, who's going to sing the roasted swan and has to sing the highest note in all of tenor literature, a high D as well. And if he doesn't sound like a roasted swan, I don't know what else.
What's left, right?
So the dates are September
21st at 8 p.m. and the 23rd at 2:30 p.m. at the Arts United Center on Main Street.
Right. And you can get your tickets at the Arts United Center. You can call the ballet. You can go to their website. You can go to our website, heartlandchorale.org, or call us. All that information is available. If you type in Carmina Burana, Fort Wayne, it should come up on your search, and you'll find one of us. You'll find the ballet or Heartland,
right,
and be able to do that. It's also, we have it on Facebook and on Twitter, so we're having a Twitter countdown. So if you have a Twitter account, like all of us,
countdown.
The countdown, that's right. Well, it's 17 days or whatever it is at this point, but every day we're tweeting a little bit more information. You can see pictures of rehearsals with the singers or with the dancers, and so there's a lot of buzz out there, and get your tickets soon. The prime seating is quickly being sold off. So
we have the information also on our Facebook page for Midday Matters, and as well as the link to your site. So yes, we just encourage people to experience this. Certainly, you've heard the music before. You've not seen locally or even probably beyond such a wonderful presentation. So what a way to start the season!
Great,
thank you.
Indeed. Thanks for having us.
Steve, Julia, and I are going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be back with more of Friday Art-Centric Midday Matters. In the meantime, if you have a question or comment, feel free to give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm.
Hal David said Alfie was his favorite of the lyrics he wrote. On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to our interview with Hal David, who wrote many great songs with Burt Bacharach. David died Saturday at the age of 91. Join us.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
A long, long time ago,
one record, a father's name printed on the cover, a father who left and a daughter who remembers.
Kind of became a conversation between me and my dad, a memory that never really happened.
The finale of our series, Mom and Dad's Record Collection, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Travel Leaders, proud supporter of public broadcasting, featuring Alaskan cruises and European holidays. Travel Leaders, making vacations monumental, online at travelbetterindiana.com. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Are you saving enough for retirement? More information at Reinbold and Anderson on NIPR's homepage at www.nipr.fm.
Welcome back to Friday Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOI. If you have a question or comment, 260-452-1185 is the number to call. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. It's 1232. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I'm joined in the studio by Julia Meek and Steve Penhall.
And, you know, it's first Friday Penhallow pointers we're noting today. And according to Steve, this fall season sounds most mellifluous.
Exact words. That's what I said
when I came. And the hits just keep it coming because we've moved from that fantastic presentation coming up of Carmina Burana, which is a joint effort of the Heartland Chamber of Choral Performers and the Fort Wayne Ballet, and now we are talking Fort Wayne Phil.
Yeah, we have with us the president and CEO of the Fort Wayne Philharmonic, J.L. Nave. I'm not sure where to start here. The season opens on September 22nd with Bursting with Life.
That's right. Yeah, I was actually counting up the number of concerts we have just in Fort Wayne over the next 36 weeks. And we've got 41 concerts scheduled, plus a couple or three actually with the ballet with Nutcracker and another few after that. So it's going to be a busy season.
Absolutely.
We're looking forward to it. But yeah, we start out on September 22nd with Bursting with Life. We have Fabio Bedini, just an incredible pianist that'll be joining us performing the third concerto by Rachmaninoff. That's one of those, Rock Three, that's right. And we're looking forward to it. It's one of those great, powerful pieces on that. The very first piece that we're performing is by composer Jonathan Leshnoff, that is someone we're commissioning a piece. So we'll actually be performing a world premiere by Jonathan Leshnoff in the 13-14 season. So we thought we'd kind of introduce our audience to this composer. We think people will really enjoy that. And this concert starts at 6 p.m. because at the end of the concert, we have a really fun post-concert party over at the Botanical Gardens right next door to the Embassy Theater. So it's kind of a great way to kick off the 12-13 season.
Yeah, absolutely. I've noticed, you know, that I don't know if this is a collaboration between you and Maestro Constantine, but the Masterworks titles are just like, they grab you, more so than they did in the past. I think it's just these titles are like, wow, what is this about, you know?
That's right. Andrew comes up with some of these. We have an incredibly talented marketing staff. So really, you know, when you put all of that creativity in one room, this is what they come up with, and appreciate the kudos on that. They all work hard on that part.
Now, tell me about these coffee concerts and after hours concerts. Now, did this grow out of something in the past, or and these are very much paired with each other, right?
Right. This is actually born from our signature series, and before that, it was called the Spectrum series. A lot of people may remember the Spectrum series from a few years ago, but these are chamber orchestra concerts. So these are concerts with usually around 45 or 50 musicians on stage, as opposed to Masterworks, which can have anywhere from 80 to close to 100 on stage. So these are it's a bit more intimate. It's over at the Arts United Center. The coffee concerts are Friday mornings at 11 a.m., we'll have coffee and Danish and you know, all sorts of little treats for people who come to those. The after hours concert is that Friday evening at 7 p.m. We have a happy hour that happens from 5:30 to 7 before the concert. It's the same concert both Friday morning and Friday evening. It's the activities around it that really differentiate the two. So we want people to come by after work, have a drink, have some free hors d'oeuvres, and you know, enjoy some great music. Or if you can get away during the day, or homeschool kids and families, retired folks that want to come by for the Friday morning performances, that's perfect for them as well.
That's fantastic. And you have, tell me about the family concerts.
The family, this has really just been an incredible concert series. This is the fifth or sixth season since we've had this family concert series. We started out with 200 people in the audience, and I think half of those were comped for the concert the very first time. We regularly get 8 to 1200 people at these concerts now. They are on Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. over at the Hour Performance Hall on the IPFW campus, and we have a Halloween Spooktacular on October 28th, the Home on the Range, which is kind of a country western theme show that we're also partnering with the Fort Wayne Youth Ballet on January 27, and then Witches, Wizards, and Fairy Tales on April 7, and we're partnering with the Fort Wayne Youth Theater on that concert. So there are pre-concert activities at 1 o'clock in the lobby of the theater, and then at 2 o'clock, the concerts last about 60 to 70 minutes. So they're perfect for all age ranges. People right. can come and play around with some of the orchestra instruments in the instrument playground before the concert. The concerts are designed to be just the right amount of time for most attention spans, and of course they're very interactive and a lot of give and take between the stage and the audience.
And it sounds like the strategy with a lot of these shows is to give everybody a different sort of feel or a different way to experience the Philharmonic. I mean, it's casual as you know this that. It seems like it just whatever atmosphere you want, whatever setup you want, you can come find it somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, not everyone loves classical music. We have pops concerts. Not everyone, you know, can bring their family and sit through a two-hour concert. We have our family series. We have a number of people that absolutely do love classical music and are really supportive of our chamber series and the choral series and the Masterworks and the Freiman series. The Freiman series has been around for, I think, about 25 years, and that's where small ensembles of our musicians get together and perform. They actually program these concerts. The musicians themselves program the concerts. So these are pieces that they choose versus all of the other concerts where Andrew is really the person that decides which pieces to perform. So they'll be in trios, quartets, quintets. It is a very, very intimate environment for those Freiman concerts. They are almost always pieces that no one has ever heard of because it's chamber ensemble repertoire. And that's just, I think, the least popular of all of the classical music, but it's performed so well, and you're literally feet away from the musicians. That's an experience that you cannot get at the Arts United Center at the Embassy Theater. So each series has its own look and feel and experience for the patron. It just depends on what you're looking for.
Right, right. Well, we have to talk about pops. Those are in addition to the holiday pops, which happens every year. There are always some new wrinkles in the pops series. Tell me about what you have going on this year.
Well, our very first pops concert of the season actually is our holiday pops. So we don't launch our pops series until December.
Oh, wow.
And we had a lot of back and forth, and between artists and scheduling and everything else, we're a little backloaded on the pop series, but we're starting out with a big bang. I mean, we have 8,000 to 9,000 people a year come to our holiday pops performances. So it's a great way to kick things off there, December 7, 8, 14, and 15. Then we move very quickly to Swingin' with Sinatra and Dorsey. And that's going to be a really fun show. Fly Me to the Moon, I've Got You Under My Skin, New York, New York. I mean, all these incredible songs that a lot of us know and love. And so it's just going to be one of those wholesome, fun evenings there on January 26th. Then we get ready for the Oscars, which are in February. And so February 16th, we have Lights, Camera, the Oscars. So we'll have music from favorite movies, Star Wars. Wizard of Oz, Titanic, Rocky, just to name a few of those. And that's kind of our honor to the Oscars that month. March 9 is Forbidden Broadway. I'm really looking forward to this one. It is not your typical Broadway. It's really the spoof and satire on Broadway. And so we'll be poking a little fun of shows like Rent, Guys and Dolls, Chicago, West Side Story, Annie, Get Your Gun. I mean, just,
and this,
you know,
this is a spinoff of a long-running Broadway or off-Broadway show that this troupe does, where they kind of refresh it every year or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it is that show, except with the full orchestra
on stage.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. And then we wrap up on May 11 with Satisfaction, the music of the Rolling Stones. That one, I think, is probably going to be one of the most popular concerts on our pop series this year. That's going to be great. Of course, that music is just fun. I mean, people are going to be up and dancing, and I know the orchestra is looking forward to it as well, because this is music, you know, we all grew up on together. So to be able for them to perform it on stage is a lot of fun. And these music of concerts that we do every year or two are always popular.
I'm sure.
It's a great marriage between that really popular music, rock music, as well as with the talents of our orchestra. And this is a great example of really how talented our musicians are, because they're going to be performing a Mahler symphony the very next week, and they will have performed a chamber concert the week before this. So our players are so diverse, so talented. They can go from playing Bach to Rolling Stones to Mozart to, you know, spooktacular to everything, and they just switch gears flawlessly.
That's great. So I'm guessing then the Rolling Stones concert will involve some a vocalist, at least, who is reminiscent of Mick Jagger.
Absolutely.
Then,
yeah. We'll have the group up there. So.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. You know, going back to the Masterworks, tell me about audience choice this year. Now, you did that for the first time last season, right? That was the first one.
That's right. That was the very first time we did that, and we had a great success. We had, you know, I think there were thousands of votes that were submitted for that. We're going to be doing that a little bit different this year. We won't have quite as many voting rounds this time. But, you know, this is a concert that the public programs.
Right.
If you vote for it, that's what we perform. And so we're really looking forward to having the second time audience choice concert. And there's going to be an education element to it as well, where we're going to have school children actually selecting part of the program themselves. This was something we just happened onto. But music teachers were using the audience choice voting rounds to educate their students about composers and pieces and all of these things. So we're embracing that, and we're really engaging the schools to continue that practice this year as well.
That's fantastic.
We need to take a short break, but we'll be back with more Friday Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOI in just a few moments.
Are you working for the weekend? Plug into the Friday Vibe. I'm Bill Forsyth, playing jazz of all types from all eras, plus blues, a little pop, folk, and rock to roll you into the weekend. The Friday Vibe, 7 to 11 on your home for jazz in Northeast Indiana, WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. Vera Bradley Incorporated co-founder Patricia Miller says she will retire from the Indiana-based handbag and luggage maker she helped start in 1982. The company announced Miller's retirement in a news release yesterday. The statement says Miller will continue to serve on the company's board of directors and on the board of the Vera Bradley Foundation for Breast Cancer. With a new state budget in the works during the next legislative session, Indiana Department of Transportation Commissioner Michael Klein says he's formulating the state's priorities and how to pay for them. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
Commissioner Klein says his outlook is divided into two parts, short and long-term future. Klein says in the next year, several significant projects from the Major Moves program are scheduled to open, including portions of I-69, the Hoosier Heartland Highway, and other roads and bridges.
We're very focused on getting those open so that they're in service and providing value not only to the people that are driving on those roadways or driving on alternative roadways that are not as good, but also to encourage that opportunity to lay that platform for economic development.
Klein says the long-term focus is on finding new and innovative ways to fund the state's transportation needs, preserving the state's roads and bridges.
As we get into the budget sessions over the next several months with the General Assembly, we'll have to get into very specific things in two-year increments.
Klein says he wants NDOT to look at existing and underutilized resources as solutions for the state's funding needs, but didn't go into specifics on what those resources might be. During a discussion with a legislative study committee, Klein talked about increased tolling as an option, including plans for tolls on the Ohio River Bridges project. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
The rainfall across Indiana from the remnants of Hurricane Isaac was enough to relieve the worst of the state's drought conditions. The U.S. Drought Monitor's weekly report released Thursday says that none of Indiana is now in the worst categories of extreme or exceptional drought. Last week's report had listed 11% of the state in exceptional drought, but much of that area in southwestern Indiana saw 3 inches or more of rain last weekend. The report still classifies about 55% of Indiana as in severe drought, roughly south of the line from Lafayette to Richmond. A month ago, nearly 69% of the state was listed in extreme or exceptional drought. A 22-year-old man has been sentenced to 90 years in prison for a shooting near the downtown of a northern Indiana city that killed one man and injured another. An Elkhart County judge ordered the sentence for Daniel Heflin of Goshen. The Elkhart Truth reports Heflin apologized during Thursday's court hearing for the March shooting that killed a 26-year-old man. Heflin pleaded guilty last month to charges of murder and attempted murder. Goshen police said Heflin fired at a pickup truck in the shooting that resulted from an earlier dispute between the man who was wounded and 25-year-old William Terry in the city about 25 miles southeast of South Bend. Terry has been sentenced on a conspiracy to commit murder charge. Two others have been sentenced on lesser charges. The Fort Wayne Tin Caps continue their quest for a league championship. WBOI's Doug Gruber has last night's results.
In Game 2 of the best-of-three playoffs in Lansing last night, the Tin Caps were down 6-0 after 4 innings, then staged their biggest comeback of the year and ended the series with a 9-6 win. The Tin Caps now move on to the Eastern Division Championship, which is the best-of-three series against the Lake County Captains, who eliminated the Bowling Green Hot Rods by identical 5-4 scores. Game 1 of the Lake County series is tomorrow night at Parkview Field at 7:05. Game 2, and 3 if necessary, will be at Lake County Sunday and Monday. If the Tin Caps get past Lake County, they'd meet the Western Division champs in a best-3-out-of-5 series. The first two would be on the road in the final games at Parkview Field. In another local note, the Fort Wayne Comets have announced the retirement of defenseman Frankie DeAngelis. In his 3 seasons with the Comets, DeAngelis was named Comets Defenseman of the Year twice. DeAngelis told the K's he's taking employment outside of hockey. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
And local health officials say an Indianapolis resident has died from the West Nile virus, the third confirmed Indiana death this year from the mosquito-borne illness. The death reported Thursday was the second reported by Marion County health officials. They announced the death of another Indianapolis resident on August 27th. An Evansville area resident's death was reported August 15th. State officials say West Nile transmission within the mosquito population is higher than in previous years, and that Indiana residents should take steps to protect themselves. Mosquitoes carrying the virus have been found in at least 67 Indiana counties so far this year. Health officials recorded one death from the disease in each of the last 2 years. The first human cases in Indiana occurred in 2002, when 11 people died. And now back to Midday Matters with your hosts, Sarah D'Elia and Julia Meek.
Welcome back to Friday Art Centric Midday Matters here on WBOI. We have just about 9 minutes left in today's show, so if you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm.
And we have with us the president and CEO of the Fort Wayne Philharmonic, J.L. Nave. And what I wanted to ask you a little bit about is something we had talked about a while back, about this, you know, this idea that you want to bring as many new people into the embassy as possible to see these shows, and make ticket prices, the lower ticket prices, lower than they'd ever been before, I think, not at least for a while. Tell me a little bit about that campaign and how that's going. And
yeah, it's actually going very well. We have seen a pretty significant uptick in our classical attendance. Pops is always popular, right. But we've really seen that increase on the classical side. Ever since we took the bottom ticket price down to $15, making that pretty accessible for most people. And the other part that we did was, it used to be there were just a small number of seats available at $15, and we were always selling those out. And we still had empty seats in the embassy. Embassy seats 2,450 people.
Right,
so
right.
Yeah, we have some room there. So we took 60% of all of the seats in the embassy theater and made them $25 or less for our Masterworks concerts. And the community has just really, really responded to that in pretty significant ways.
Now, what season is this for Andrew Constantine? How long has he been?
This is his third full season.
Okay.
So he's coming into his third full season as music director. The very first year that he was with us for about a half a season. Mm-hmm. So you can call it three and a half seasons, I guess, yes. So, you know, he's really, I think, very quickly gotten into the groove with the Fort Wayne Philharmonic and really made a pretty substantial impression, not just on the orchestra, but on the community as a whole.
Well, we were talking during the break about he is a celebrity. He's a little bit of a sex symbol, not really, but you know what I mean. It's just like I get all these questions all the time about Andrew, and people are just fascinated by this good-looking Brit, you know.
Yeah.
They just really want to know about this guy, and I think that's got to be part of the, you know, people coming in for that as well.
I think it is, but also just the concerts that Andrew programs. I mean, these are really diverse but very exciting programs. There's always something on a concert that is going to be more familiar, but at the same time, he's pushing the outer limits a little bit.
Sure.
When we did Hell's Angels,
right?
not too long ago, that was kind of a stretch, but we had over 2,000 people at that concert.
Yeah.
I mean, that was when you get Harleys on stage and four bassoonists and, you know, leather playing this piece. I mean, that's not what typically happens, but it was a lot of fun. It was a great piece, and I think those are the things that Andrew brings to the table. Plus, he's just a very accessible guy. It's not unusual to see him in the lobby before a concert, just shaking hands and welcoming people and answering questions or whatever. And that's a lot of music directors can be a little distant, or I think it's because they're focused on what they're about to do. But Andrew can focus, but at the same time still remain accessible to the community. And I think that's really what just kind of sets him apart from a lot of people. So we're very fortunate, very happy to have him here.
It also seems like he and Samir Patel just work beautifully hand in hand, ear in ear, so to speak, to really not only understand and, of course, want to establish the connections, but they love what they share, and they share it so nicely. How has the whole impact of the increase in accessible, wonderful, fantastic, creative music, how has that impacted the city? And then how do your listeners impact what the Philharmonic does?
Well, it's when we have this increase in audience, that just lends even more excitement to coming to an event.
Sure.
And so we're seeing this upward spiral. As you know, we have success, that kind of breeds more success on that front. It energizes the orchestras. So the musicians and Andrew and Samir, when he's on the podium, are all even more pumped about the music that they're performing when you've got a large house, a large audience behind you to enjoy the concert. A lot of hoots and hollers and bravos, people really getting into it. And
sure. It
is not, we walk a fine line between kind of that stuffy, highbrow, environment and being very accessible, more relaxed. And, it's when you go to a concert, it is about the music. That's why we're all there. And so the tradition of sitting there and listening attentively to some people can be a little standoffish, I guess, or a little difficult. No. But you really need that because, that's how you're going to, hear what the orchestra is performing on the stage. But, after that, it's... no holds barred. It's people are up on their feet and screaming and cheering for what they just heard. And it's incredible. And we have people that applaud, gasp in between movements. And
wow. You
know what? I love it. I love when I hear that. And I've had a lot of people say, oh my gosh, that's got to be disruptive to the orchestra. And I said, not at all. Mm-hmm. And why I love it so much is because I know there are people that are probably there for the first time. And they really loved what they just heard, and they want to express their appreciation. And I say, what's wrong with that? So, it's a much more inviting environment. You don't have to get dressed up in the coat and tie. We have people that do. We have people that come in blue jeans. Mm-hmm. We have people that come in golf shirts. It's not about how you dress. It's about the fact that you want to come in and listen to the music in the embassy or the Arch United Center or wherever we are.
That's great. I real quickly here, I wanted to ask you about, you were talking about Hell's Angels, and it seems to me that there's this commitment now to contemporary composers, living composers. It seems like you incorporate that music very much into each season. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, we believe that classical music is not a dead art form.
Right.
It's very much a living art form. There mm-hmm. are still composers, alive composers. Right. Not every composer is dead.
Right.
So there are still people out there writing music. There's still music to be written. And we think that we have a responsibility to the art form to bring that music to the public, to bring it to life, whether it's performing a piece like the Starburst at the beginning of the season that has already been performed by many orchestras around the country, but Jonathan, obviously, very much still an active composer, but commissioning a new work that our orchestra and audience will be experiencing for the very first time.
That's great.
All right, and we're unfortunately going to have to say goodbye. Time does fly when you're having fun. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1 and streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne. And Julia and I want to remind you all that you can watch this edition of Friday Art-Centric Midday Matters tomorrow at 4 p.m. from Access Fort Wayne on Comcast Channel 57 and Frontier Channel 27. This episode of Midday Matters and all of our Midday Matters shows are podcasted by the end of our day at our new website, nipr.fm. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is next. From W.